Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. See ebaymotors.com.
Every team, every topic, everywhere. This is Believe.
If you want to run uncut, yeah. Unapologetic from the jump, yeah. And no politics in this club, just dirt from the streets and the cliques in the mud. Tech 12, best podcast for the Seahawks, number one sports talk, yeah, we got it on live. Tech 12, every episode, 12 hot takes, and we repping for Seattle, my place. Tech 12.
It's the Tech 12 podcast. Thanks for tuning in. On this episode, I mean, we weren't planning on doing an episode till next week, but on this episode, there is breaking, shocking Seahawks news to cover. We had to call an emergency podcast session. The news is... Pete Carroll is out as the Seahawks head coach, and there's much to discuss. So Lofa's here, Katie's here, McNeil is here, and we got into it. We went all the way through it. We'll tell you where we were when we heard the news and what we thought about it, of course. Shout out to our sponsor, Wiener Schnitzel. Two locations, Everett and Fife. Go on in, do something different for lunch today. Mention Pete Carroll, and you might get some tears. Mention the Take 12 podcast, and you might get a, or no, you will get a free hot dog with your purchase. Mention our hockey podcast, release the show, get a free ice cream cone.
We don't talk about the other shows on the show.
I know, but maybe they want dessert. So there you go. It's Wiener Schnitzel, everybody. Everett and Fife. Lofa, man, I mean, we really covered it on this episode, right? Like, ugh.
I'm spent.
What did we talk about? I mean, so I asked you, let's see, we talk about, will he raise the flag? Will they build a statue? Is he going into the Hall of Fame? Will he take another job? We talked about
possible
that.
Uniform change.
Will the Seahawks have a new uniform? We really went through everything here. And of course, Lofa also gives us plenty of Pete stories along the way, not just from his time with the Seahawks, of course, but also going back to the USC days. And so sit back, buckle up, and enjoy us. Listen to us talk about the greatest Seahawks coach of all time. Well, why don't we just start with where were you when you heard the news and what did you think?
I was on a call and a friend got a breaking news alert that Pete was no longer the head coach. And then I got one and it just, then the text started to fly and everything. Yeah. And it's just, I was shocked. One year left in his contract, like we stated, Katie, and you know, we're only a couple pieces away from a deep playoff run and a Super Bowl run. Mm-hmm. But I understand in terms of timing, just Pete being 72. And, you know, there's never a great time to move on from a legend. Like, whether it's a player, whether it's a coach, it doesn't matter. It's but you know it's inevitable. And it's a sad day.
Yeah, it's funny because we talked about it on our last episode, or I brought it up, and we kind of kicked it around a little bit, and, you know, I started seeing things on Twitter in the sort of deep recesses of Seahawk fan Twitter that me and McNasty dabble in, sort of towards the end of the Steelers game, Like there was moments Pete was kind of taking last, sort of staying on the field, sort of seemed to be taking it in. I think we mentioned it. But I, of course, kept telling myself, like, there's no possible way. Like, you know, just get that out of your head. Like, come on. I mean, they almost made the playoffs. It's a winning season. It didn't seem like he, like we had talked about, like he had lost the locker room in any way or anything. So I was shocked as well. I think shocked is a good way to say it. I was totally shocked. And then I started thinking immediately, of course, as soon as I saw that he was going to stay on it as an advisor, I thought, okay, well, then maybe this is actually Pete's idea. But then when you listen to the press conference and stuff, no, it doesn't sound like this was Pete's idea at all, which then made me start thinking they have to know who they want to bring in already, because you don't, as you said, move on from a legend unless you know what you want to do. And you better be pretty secure in that, by the way, because this guy is probably going to have a statue built outside the stadium.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think that's kind of what, you know, and I'm just projecting what it signaled to me is you don't, this isn't a, you know, they had their meetings and everything. And I don't think anything happened in there. I think this is something they probably talked about you know, with Pete. He deserves that.
Yeah.
And I'm not just talking for the Super Bowl. You have to look at the total body of work and what I think was his best two coaching years, you know, Super Bowl withstanding, the last 2 years. And I think that's what, you know, it's to go 9-8 when you lose your franchise quarterback. Everybody that's lost their franchise quarterback, look what happened to the Patriots. Look what happened to the Colts when they lost Peyton Manning. They ended up with the number one overall pick. Look, I mean, you just, there's so many, you know, examples to pull from. So in my opinion, this was the two best years I think that I've seen out of Pete. And it was two of the most fun years I've seen of him on the sideline.
Oh yeah.
I think he was loving every minute of the challenge.
They win a couple more games last year and he could have been coach of the year for sure. I think, you know, just a couple more wins in the win column, cause they did make the playoffs, but just, you know, a couple extra. Cause like you said, what he did with what he had, young guys, just keeping the ship steady with the exit of Russ and not losing seasons. I'm, you know, they went for two against Arizona and won that game. You know, maybe, who knows? Maybe, hey, maybe they were telling him to take a dive and Pete said, no, I'm going to win this game in the fourth quarter. You know, maybe Pete just took the headset off and said, no, Gino, we're going for two. And then, you know, the man upstairs had to get rid of the rebel Pete at 72. Who knows? Maybe they wanted those three extra spots, Lofa.
Three extra spots?
Yeah.
No.
Come on.
But it's just classic Pete fashion. You know, we're not here to get a tie and play for overtime. We're here to win. And just from that press conference, man, it was beautifully done.
His exit one.
Yeah.
Well, can we stay on the last game for 1 second? Can we stay on the last game for 1 second though? Just cause cause that's his last game and what a Pete game, right? Like, going for two at the end, throwing it, finding Lockett in the back, doing Lockett things, and then winning the game with his defense on the field and a missed field goal and a nail biter for all of us. That's a Pete Carroll game. So I was smiling thinking about that yesterday.
There's so many memories, especially, you know, everyone brings up the bad memories in Arizona. I always bring up the good. You know, I go back to when I was coaching and we, you know, ended the season. It was a 2015 season, and, you know, we were number one in defense, and our defense, so we took out, you know, the Legion of Boom, and all those guys came out because we had the win in hand.
Mm-hmm.
And the backups finished, and if they had let up a score, which they were driving, the Cardinals, it would have taken us from number one down to two or three.
Wow.
And they didn't pull him. Chris Richard and Pete were like, no, we got who we want out there. Let him finish it. And we came away as the fourth consecutive year number one defense, which hadn't been done since the 50s in the Browns.
Mm. Mm. Lots of good Pete memories, man. Well, we should get into those. But you mentioned the presser. I have some clips, actually, from it that we could play. One that I definitely want to play for you. But did you have a chance to listen to it at all, or have you seen some clips?
I did. I watched it.
Yeah.
On my couch.
Yeah.
And man, I was almost in tears. I'm glad they didn't tell me, because if I was there, I probably would have been in tears.
Yeah.
And, you know, if they told everybody, that place would have been mobbed.
It would have been packed.
There was, you know, yeah, it was already packed as it was, standing room only.
Yeah, he got me. He got me at one point. You know, in his Pete way, yeah, his opening statement is 11 minutes. So we're not going to play all 11 minutes of Pete, but it's classic Pete. And he got me. He got me right off the top when he started kind of talking about all the people that have worked for him in all the years and all the coaches. I mean, he, you know, I'm sure you heard, like, and you're one of those guys, and of course a player and a coach for him. And just, and then I just started thinking about, man, 14 years of just, well, you could tell us, like, just coming in and out of the building and working for the guy. And he got so choked up when he was thinking about all of you guys that have worked for him. I thought, and that's when I really heard his voice shake for the first time. And you could tell how emotional that connection is for him. And so, and it made me think of you, and I just thought that was cool.
Oh, it meant the world to all of us.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, when a head coach gets all those wins and all that, you know, it's usually them that get noticed and recognized. Behind closed doors, he's always showering us with praise and saying, hey, you know, we couldn't do it without, you know, the run game or this. And like, he's pointing out all the collective efforts of the individual coaches in each, you know, department. So, you know, for him to bring it back, because this is really a day that really should have just been about Pete. And I think he kind of showed you his character right there when he could have sat up there and talked about all his great memories. He talked about his coaches and his players.
Yeah. Yeah. That was really cool. And he was clearly emotional. And, you know, I think we can talk about, I want to talk about, like, just all the, maybe what went into the decision a little bit more, but the clip I want to play you from the press conference, since we're talking mm-hmm. about it, is this, this clip right here. I have, I wish I could share the screen video wise for you, but I think for you, it'll be audio. When he just talks about the players, man, cause, and what the players in the league mean to him and all of that. And I just think it's cool. And you don't really hear, you know, this kind of thing that often. So I think it's cool here. Let's go here.
Players that have been part of this thing, you don't probably know this, how deeply I feel about the NFL is about the players. And we've not recognized that to my satisfaction. I brought it up at the league meetings a few years ago and probably surprised some people about it. But this league is about the players. And without those guys doing what they do, there's nothing. It isn't about the ownership. It's not about the coaching. It's not about the color of the uniforms or the going to the stadiums. It's about those guys doing what they do and putting their body on the line so regularly. And it's not just a statement. It's real. We should always, in my opinion, understand that we should celebrate those guys because they are the NFL. They are this game that we love and the game we get to coach. Who would I be coaching, you know? I have a lot of thoughts about that, but I really do appreciate it. And to see some of our guys here today, I mean, it means the world. It means the world.
He got me again. He got me again.
Yeah, he got me again, come on, man.
Because, you know, like, I want to get your thoughts, Lofa, first on that. I mean, right?
You see why people play for him.
Yeah.
And they give everything they have. I mean, everything, man.
Yeah.
It's real.
Yeah, it's, man. Hopefully, like, he gets it. You know, he gets it. And hopefully people listening and fans out there and, you know, a player goes the wrong way on a play or someone makes some boneheaded thing and we jump on them and all that. And, you know, and we do it here on the podcast and it's fun and all that. But and you should, because you're a sports fan. But, you know, Pete, he gets it. And hopefully everybody out there, you get it, because at the end of the day, you know, it's about the players and the whole league is the players and the owners gotta just get it. You know, Pete gets it. I think all the good coaches get it. You know, I'm trying to get it in the coaching I do for my young players. I'm sure you do, Lofa. It's about the players, isn't it? Always.
Yeah. And another thing, you know, in his messaging that he hinted on there about the players is, if you're not having fun, you're not doing it right.
Mm.
You know, and mm-hmm. I think that was always a big question for any NFL team that was going to, you know, go on limb and hire him was, oh, well, you know, it's a bunch of rah-rah. And I love that he went up here and dispelled the myth of, you know, a player's coach can't succeed. And no, I mean, he always just cared more about his players.
Yeah.
And he made that evident. And mm-hmm. if someone had a problem with that, it was probably someone that was accustomed to just getting yelled at, you know?
Well,
and he, I think, you know,
yeah, that's the coaching
style,
right?
that's his style.
Yeah.
And, you know, for people to say, oh, it won't work up here, he proved it. And I mean, I think that is, he's one of four coaches in the history of coaching to win the college national championship and the Super Bowl.
Mm-hmm.
That is unbelievable.
Yeah. And I mean, damn near won the Super Bowl twice. And I mean, how many more yes. college championships would he have won and everything? Yeah. Yeah, man. I had so many thoughts and they just like flew right out of my head. I mean, I think for me, you know, we can talk about the football of it. We can talk about the direction the team was headed. We can talk about the X's and the O's. We can talk about should you replace a coach or not. But I think the reason that clip gets me is because like he just win or lose, like he gets what it's about and it's about the players. And I just, I, you know, if his motto for the players is protect the team, I think Pete's for himself is protect his players. You know, and he always did, I think, yeah. From an outsider's perspective. I have no clue. I've never met the guy. But that's just how it felt as a fan. And what more do you want from your head coach than just being loyal as hell and protecting your players? And, well, I mean, he referenced it. All how the guys were in the room. Bobby was there. Gino was there. Tyler Lockett was in the room. I think other players were in the press conference room. Honestly, they didn't seem happy. I don't think they want him gone. I think they were shocked. Don't you?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I mean, because they did have end of the year meetings, and in those meetings, you know, before they worked everything out, I guarantee you the message was like, hey, we'll be back better than we were this year. And like, let's just keep getting better. It was just kind of like one of the ethos of the always compete, mm-hmm. but always get better, like always get better. Like those were like the staples in his program, whether it was college or the NFL. And it carried over, man. And, you know, so I think just disbelief is probably the best word I could put, you know, if I had to think of what I would feel like if I was in those seats. That, you know, one of the pillars that has always given you a reason to believe in this team won't be on the sideline anymore. That's, you know, and we've seen it with players before. And then now as the coach, you know, he's the one that always carried the torch for us. And so, you know, John's got big shoes to fill, but John is also one of the other pillars.
Yeah.
And so I have faith yeah. going forward. And again, like,
well,
see,
it sounds
this is
like
just,
Pete will be around to help out too, or whatever,
will,
whatever this advisor
this
role
is. Pete
I don't
Carroll
know.
You're hearing right now. This is Pete Carroll. You're hearing right now, the voice of optimism
yeah.
and hope.
Mm-hmm.
And it's one of the gifts he's given me as a player and a coach under him is, and I think that's why, you know, you could go to any Seahawks podcast and listen to them bash the team you love. You could do that. There's a lot of them. But why do I always talk about the silver lining? Because that's what a fucking winner does.
Mm.
And that's what Pete taught me.
Yeah, I was telling Katie before we came on here, we were kind of talking about it, setting everything up. And, yeah, I was saying he's taught me stuff just as a fan. I mean, watching him for 14 years, watching the way he goes about his coaching, and I coach, you know, my son and daughter now and these other young players, and the thing that we're talking about protecting your players and knowing that it's about the players and about keeping it fun and high energy and optimistic and positive, and that, you know, even when things are going bad, you'll get your opportunity and keep competing. And I never read the book. I'm just a Seahawks fan, but look at all the things he's given me. So, you know, and again, X's and O's, wins or losses, we can talk about all that stuff forever. But when it comes to the man, I think, and when it comes to the coach, just a legend and full of lessons. And so I think he'll be missed in that way for sure.
We ask players who come on, former players who come on to the show, what their favorite Pete-ism is. Brett, I don't mm-hmm. think we know what your favorite Pete-ism is, because you're the one who usually asks the question.
Well, I'll tell you, when they lose a close game in the fourth quarter, it's not the win in the first quarter, second and third quarter, fourth quarter thing. I do love it when it works, and I use it for my players when it's, because it's basically it's not over till it's over, right? And that's a great one to always keep competing. But I was saying to you before the show, I think it's really, and Lofa even said, it's like, it's just this whole thing, just this whole compete thing, his whole, you know, there's someone coming after you if you don't kind of, you know, you got to take care of your stuff, because it's not just like all positivity, like Lofa said. And, you know, maybe I get this as a coach sometimes. People are, oh, this guy's just too loud and energetic and running around and doesn't teach the fundamentals. It's like, no, don't get it twisted. And I think the same things with Pete, like, don't get it twisted. If you're not performing, you're out. You know, like, compete. You know what I mean? Like, come on. I'm not that way with my 8-year-olds. Pete's that way. But what I'm saying is, like, but what I get a little from him is just the, like, you got to kind of take it seriously when you're out here between the lines. You got to compete. You got to tap in. You got to be, you know, we're here to do the thing. But by the way, have a shit ton of fun while we're doing it. Mm-hmm. Because happy.
I think that's the thing that got lost in translation in terms of, you know, at SC and, you know, everybody saying, oh, it won't work, is, you know, they don't take it seriously. No one worked harder than we did when we were at SC, and that's evident of the 34-game win streak, which, you know, even Pete alluded to. He goes, I think I got ruined by all the winning. He goes, now there's never enough winning. That's one of the quotes I'll take from, you know, that. That presser was unbelievable. But he said, I think I got ruined when you went on a 2-year spree of no losses and 2 straight national title appearances. It's, you know, I feel like something probably clicked or changed, because I don't think he had that amount of success, you know, as a head coach. And then from there he said, oh, it is possible. You know, this, I can sustain this over a long period of time. And so he was ready for that next challenge when he came up here. But I think a lot of people didn't think he took it seriously, when he is one of the most serious in the room at all times. But, you know, it doesn't mean you have to be yelling. It doesn't mean you have to, you know, not talk. And you know, there's no one more disappointed when we lose.
Well, like, and that's,
he takes it as hard as the players do.
Well, and I think that's why him and Russ work so well together, isn't it? Because you have Pete coming at it from the stay positive, energy, high energy, everything's going to work out, optimistic. And Russ was the same way. They had to be 2 peas in a pod right off the bat, at least, in terms of their philosophy and then work ethic also, because Pete comes at it from the work ethic, and we know Russell does. And so that had to be why that was just so beautiful, especially at the beginning.
Yeah. I mean, you're not going to outwork. Pete is in there until the early hours of the morning. Mm. Like, I remember him coming by my cubicle and just like, I'm like, why are you still here?
He's like, what do you mean? I never left.
Yeah, exactly. Right. And just, you know, he's like, hey, I sent you some clips, check them out, you know, just about a player or about a scheme. And he's like, I just want your thoughts. And sometimes he remembered. Usually if he asked twice, it was important, because, you know, I would do these reports and then talk to him, and he's like, oh, I don't have time. And so it was just like little shit like that, that, I mean, it makes Pete, right?
Yeah, Pete's Pete. Yeah.
He's turning over every rock, might not need the answer to everything, but he wants to know that, you know, it's within reach. Mm-hmm. And relentless pursuit of perfection, just like you're talking about, you know, Russ. And they absolutely, it was a match made in heaven. Where else does a third rounder come in and supplant the guy that just got paid the big bucks to be the man?
You got
to
believe,
And who has the balls to make that decision? Big balls Pete does.
Yeah.
Right? And it worked out. And I think just both of their unwavering belief in themselves and the team showed you what greatness was.
It's
and
like, I mean, Ted Lasso in real life. It's like Ted Lasso in real life, isn't it? It's like, just believe in yourself, you know, positive attitude, all of that. I mean, believe me, Seahawks fans, trust me, there were times when I was annoyed. I mean, they'd lose a close game and he'd be up there like, well, you know, we gave it our best shot and we really had a chance to win. I'm like, can you just take it seriously for a second? You know, I get it, but it works. It works. I mean, looking back, you can't argue with the record, can you?
At no point in all of those press conferences, those, you know, even after a loss, was he not telling the truth of what he believed.
That's right.
And I think that is what guys pay attention to. That's what we as players, we look for, like, okay, does this loss, does this win, does anything change them? And He never changed. No. And I think that's what was cool to see. And my favorite Pete-ism, taking it back to producer Katie.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
It comes from SC. And because, you know, I was there in the early days when things were just starting to turn around. And, you know, we were getting on a good roll. And he would always come in and he'd be like, hey, you know, pretty good game. He'd do his old routine, his shtick, and, you know, everybody be all pumped up and jazzed and right, jacked and pumped. And then he'd bring you right back down to earth. He'd be like, we ain't done shit yet, boys. That was my favorite fucking speech of all time, because he would do it. When we were on that undefeated for 2 years, he kept doing it until we got to the big game. He goes, all right, we finally done something. And, you know, we're all like, I mean, it's the fucking national championship. Yeah. You know, like, you got to acknowledge that. He's like, we've earned the right to compete one more time.
Wow.
And he didn't make it a big deal. He mm-hmm. just said, congratulations. Now let's get to work. But that I loved, and I wished he did that, you know, when I was there as a player and as a coach in the Seahawks, that after every win, he brought you back down to earth a little more. Like, hey, we ain't done shit yet, boys. Just wait till next week.
There had to be nothing better than when you make a big play. And for you, you gotta take us inside of this. Because for you, it'd be at USC. There's a great picture I found on Google Image of him hugging the shit out of you at USC. It's great. And then, of course, as a Seahawk, there had to be nothing better than just making a big play and seeing him being the loudest cheerleader on the sideline as you come running over.
It's crazy, right? Because you see most head coaches and they're just very stoic and mm-hmm. just like, hey, nice play. Like, you know, maybe a high five, but no, he genuinely, he reacts as if he was out there with you. And, it's rare.
Well, he is in a way, that, isn't he?
Huh?
He is out there with you.
Absolutely. Yeah. And so it was cool. You know, there's a lot of big plays and everybody gets celebrated. And I think that's, you know, Pete always, he put up clips like the next day. And I think, you know, a lot of coaches, this is what I took from, you know, as a coach, even as a player, I observed and I noticed, I was like, he celebrates the effort, you know, he'll put up a couple plays and recognize a couple individual efforts that, hey, you know, Mebane, if you don't take on that double team, loaf doesn't come free. Hey, you know, if you don't give 100% effort chasing that ball, when it pops out, there's only their guys to recover it. And like, that's the biggest teaching point, you know, is like just the effort, right? That's something that he's always harped on in terms of, you know, what he looks for.
Well, that's
for
the compete thing, right? Like, it's just, if that you're always competing, then you're always putting in max effort, aren't you?
Everything you got.
Right, right. Ugh. I mean, you have to consider yourself lucky to have played for him as much as you have when you kind of look around, because, I mean, all coaches aren't the same. There's some real jerks out there, sort of, you know? And I'm sure Pete could be a jerk sometimes, too, or whatever in that way. Everyone's got egos or whatever. But at the end of the day, to play for a guy who's just rooting for you as hard as he is, and to have it be so genuine coming out of him, it's just got to be so cool. So,
yeah. No, it was different, right? You know, I even from college, I had never experienced anything like that in high school and growing up, like just, especially coming from the East Coast, you know, I had never seen a coach like that. Mm-hmm. There was no coach like that. There is no coach like that. I think some are trying to, you know, capture that essence that makes him special, but that's Pete, you know, it's you can't duplicate that because that's him.
Was he different in college compared to the pros at all?
Not at all. Same speeches, same delivery, same cadence, same time.
It works.
You know, he did work on some new jokes, which were refreshing to not hear the same joke, but he got creative in his delivery. He mastered it. And nice. I think, you know, that's what he expected and really more so than expected. It's what he wanted for you as a player, was just to you to be your best you could possibly
But
be.
Does that mean that he was already at his best? Like, how did Pete get better?
Well, because you can always get better. That's probably his philosophy for everyone, including himself, right?
Yeah.
Oh, sorry.
No, he'll find ways. No. You're right. You're absolutely right, Brett. But I mean, it's what he believes is, I'm never finished. I'm never done. The work's never done. There's some area. And he would, whether it was like going over reports and like analyzing every single thing, he's like, oh, we took a step backwards in short yardage. You know, why? Like he wanted to know. And then, you know, he would look at all the schemes and like, you know, well, what did we do the majority of the time? Why didn't it work? He, every single fucking detail.
He's the boss. He needs the info. Like Dr. Evil.
And, but in terms of, you know, how he got better, you know, just the delivery and timing of his jokes, you know, and, you
but
know,
they were
everything.
The same
joke?
Well, with age and wisdom and, you know, you learn timing and.
He's like
you know,
your uncle that just has the same material for the last 30 years, but it's gotten slightly better.
Look,
is that what we're saying?
I just hope that because.
Well, we'll see, because every 4 years in college or every year you lose a crop of, you know, players and you get a new crop. And so it's new material to them. But when you get to the NFL and you got like a 7-8 year vet, you know, it's, you got to not change the punchline, but change the delivery right. or the arrival of the punchline. You
keep
know, it's,
fresh.
It's so he yeah. kept us on our toes.
Oh man. Oh, where was I? I had something and then I don't even know what I was going to say.
I got something.
Okay, go
264
for it.
Wins.
Yeah.
Between college and the NFL.
Yeah.
81 and 83.
Yeah. You know, and his run, especially with Russ, right? The record. I mean, the final record with the Seahawks, 14 seasons, 137 and 89. But, I mean, if you subtract even just the last, like, 3 years and kind of go to the glory years of it, that percentage, the win percentage jumps up. And, I mean, what a legend. Just... You can't argue
Those
with the
are
success.
Staggering numbers,
you
man.
Can't argue with the success, man. Like all the winning seasons, the playoffs, the what he did for the team in terms of the division championships. I mean, come on.
It was cool to hear him talk about it was my last home game. And I actually texted him about it. Beastquake. He brought it up, you know, in his speech, you know, that we're playing the defending. They asked him about a moment that stuck out, and he said, "We're playing defending Super Bowl champions, and no one's given us a chance." He goes, "And we're talking about it all week, like we're winning. We got this." And I remember doing—I forget who the reporter was, but I told him, "I go, just wait to see what happens." I go, "Because we're already, we got this. Yeah. We know in our heart that we believe this is our game." And this was after New Orleans several, five weeks before beat us, you know, by 2 scores
yep.
in New Orleans.
Yeah.
So, but I remember the feeling of believing it was our game.
Nah, that's what he gives you. So, let's talk legacy. When does he raise the 12th man flag? Give me a date. But that's got to be coming, right? That's coming.
Immediately. I mean, that's got to be
first game
next year.
First
oh,
game.
Come on now. His arm will fall off. He'll be waving that towel so crazy. Okay. When do they build a statue? And do they build a statue? Because they have to build a statue.
Yeah. Where does it go? That's just my question.
I don't know. Somewhere out in front. But is he chewing gum in the statue? Or is he throwing gum? Is he mid-chew? How do they capture the gum?
It's got to be like
I think it would just
in bronze.
I think it would be the iconic pose would just be when he rips his headset off and raises his arms in the air.
Yeah.
I think that's the lasting memory I think we should all have.
Absolutely.
And see every time we go to the stadium.
Well, cuz the headset was coming off cuz it was always on the final play. He didn't need it anymore.
Yeah.
Whether it was on defense or offense, we always won on the final play with Pete.
Oh, man.
Okay, Ring of Honor?
Yeah.
Absolutely. Hello? Yep, yeah, that's coming. How about, okay, Seahawks Hall of Fame, 100%. He doesn't have a number, so, I mean, we could retire a headset. I don't know. But how about NFL Hall of Fame?
Yeah.
Yep.
You know, he had a dynasty,
mm-hmm.
and I think anyone that's had one has been in, right?
Yeah.
No.
Well, I'm not going to – we won't bring it up.
We don't have to hash it out, but I'm just saying, you go back to that game 2 years in a row, you have that success, you win 5 titles. Dude, that is a record, you know,
yeah.
and a half.
Yeah.
Like, and then you got to count the wins from his first 4 years,
yep.
one with the Jets, 3 with the Patriots. You know, there's another 2 playoff appearances, another win.
what he's done for the game, what he's meant to the players. Numbers. Yeah, totally. I mean, image-wise, like he's perfect. Put him in.
When the Hawks posted 181 wins, it blew my mind. I couldn't believe it. I knew it was a lot, but that is a shitload amount of wins. You'd be lucky to coach 181 games. Never mind coach enough games to get 181 wins.
Absolutely. Oh, speaking of which, okay. Before we do all this legacy hunting, how about coaching another team? Question mark? Is he done?
I don't think it's a question mark. I think it's a matter of time.
Yeah. College or pro?
He'll have his pick.
Yeah.
I think
Alabama.
I think Pete, where he would be happiest, I believe, would be in college. Mm-hmm. But in terms of schedule-wise, I think he enjoys the NFL schedule because, you know, you don't have to recruit. You're literally just – you go to the combine, you look at tape, and then you select the players you want.
Uh-huh.
In college, there is nobody right now. Maybe Deion is the only one that has a chance to land a kid over Pete. I promise you. I don't give a shit that he's 72. He will go out there and out hustle. He is the best recruiter I've ever seen.
So is he locked to the Seahawks because of the contract? Is that why they made him an advisor? Or can he be like, no way, I've got two words for you guys, fight on?
I have no idea the details of the contract.
Right.
But I feel like, you know, it all happened kind of fast.
Yeah.
I think that's why he's, you know, I'll just stick around as an advisor for a year. But in that year, I guarantee you his phone's ringing right now.
Yeah. Well, okay. How about the Chargers? L.A., sunny weather, Justin Herbert.
Oh, landing spots? Any team.
Pick one. Yeah, that's true.
I'm dead serious, too, when I say that. It's just pick one.
Yeah.
And any owner would, you know, fly him out or fly over to him and be like, hey, Pete, Let's do this.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. How about this? I wrote down, new uniform question mark. We kind of got this current uniform when Pete came, or at least 1 year later, I think. And then Holmgren sort of had his uniform during his time. Does whoever's coming next, are we due for a uni upgrade or change or refresh or, you know what I mean?
I don't know. I think that was kind of a league going from Reebok to Nike thing,
okay,
more so than turning the page on an era.
I kind of like the idea, though, that the coach gets his own unis for the era. I like it.
Yeah, but what would we go to? You're hiring another era legacy coach, though.
Well, I don't know. We could design it right now. I mean, look, the throwback was popular. I'm not pitching the throwback as the uniform, but what I would pitch you is a bit of a mix of the old and the new, with the new colors, but a bit of the throwback design. So you get rid of the little stripe right here across the chest. You kind of keep that hawk thing on the sleeve.
You need more green. Seahawks need more green because the Sonics are coming. Oh. So the city needs more green integration.
Well, what if they start, instead of using the neon, maybe they go to a bit of more of the Kelly, and instead of such a dark navy, they come a little to the royal, but not fully.
Mm-hmm.
The silver helmets are dope, but maybe you mirror them instead.
Ooh,
you know what I mean? Like the chromed out mirror. Mm.
The chrome, yeah. The chrome is clean.
Come on now.
I've always loved the neon, though.
Yeah.
I mean, shit.
Yeah.
The Deons brought that to us. Deion Branch and Deion Grant. We were literally coloring our sneakers with green highlighters.
Yes.
Oh, right.
And paint pens. They should get royalties on that. They started that.
McNasty joined the chat as soon as we started talking uniforms. You got thoughts? Is that why you jumped in? No, he's still muted. Or maybe he just joined the chat. Oh, wait.
Sorry, what was the question?
I said you jumped into the chat as soon as we started talking uniforms. You had nothing to say during all the Pete stuff. We start talking uniforms. Yeah. You jump in. Do you have something to say about the uniforms?
Give us an away alternate uniform.
Hey, what are your thoughts, though? Let's get the down and dirty from McNasty. You have a thought on Pete? We've had all of our thoughts on here.
I wanted one more year, and I think they blindsided him, and I don't like that.
Yeah, I don't like it really much either. Yeah. But, yeah. Okay. Hey. How about this?
What's Twitter saying, McNasty?
Oh, yeah. We didn't really get the down and dirty.
Yeah.
There's a lot of stuff on Twitter.
How long do we think that Peak knew?
Hold on, everyone. Breaking news from McNasty. There's a lot of stuff on Twitter. Yeah, we know.
Now to our weather.
Come on. You're supposed to give us the dark and dirty of Twitter. What are they saying out there? What are those?
It's a lot of sadness.
Right, but then there's also these troll Seahawk fans that are like, oh, good, I wanted him gone a while ago. Liars. You liars. What, you wanted to go 3-14 for four seasons? No, you did not. Get out of here.
Well, Russell posted a photo of, like, 13 former players from that team in 2013 at, like, a bar last night at 1 a.m. or at, like, 12 a.m. And we're trying to figure out how everyone planned a gigantic dinner last night already.
Oh, they all fly PJ, dude.
How long
did they
know? Damn,
they were
there
till 12? I got the call, but, like, I was basketball kid stuff.
Russell's hanging there with the Legion of Boom and stuff. It's crazy. Yeah.
What? McNeil, why didn't you grab a microphone and head down there? Where were they?
Someone woke me up out of sleep at 1 a.m. and told me.
Oh, come on, man. They don't use VPNs. We could have figured that out.
Sidney Rice is there.
Oh, we know. Oh. All right.
Hauschka's there.
Next time. Ooh, Hausch Money? Sweet. No, dude, they all live in the area, don't they, Lova? They got together.
Except for Russ.
Yeah. Well, oh.
So, I mean.
Well, he flies PJ, though. He just jumped on.
Absolutely.
The
but, yeah. I mean, it's still, I mean. That's how
awesome
Pete is.
Yeah.
You know, like that.
Yeah.
You know, even things didn't end the way we wanted to, you know, with Russ and, you know, to see him jump on a plane and fly back. I don't believe he was in the area, you know.
How long did Pete know? Would he have found out
Monday.
Yesterday?
I bet it was Monday.
Okay.
Or something.
I thought he walked in yesterday and they told him because someone said his outfit wasn't formal enough. For the press conference.
There's some down and dirty. See? There you go, McNasty. That's what I want to hear.
That's looking into the details there, McNasty.
Yeah. I love it. That's awesome. Oh, man. Yeah. Okay, what about this? If he's still there as an advisor, Lofa, and this is just me spitballing some ideas. As long as he's in the building, I still think if they're on the fence about a certain draft pick, they should make them still have to beat Pete in one-on-one basketball.
Shoot off for the pick?
Yeah, I don't know if you guys know that, but that's how they decide draft picks down there at the VMAC. No, I'm just kidding. But they should keep doing that because that's, yeah.
Oh, you know what? I mean, if there's one bright side, I think we'll probably get more Pete content out of this.
Yeah, true.
You know, whether it's cruising the hallways on the Razor or, you know, having a shoot off. I think we'll see more of that, which would be cool.
Oh, man. Love it. Well, okay. Is it too early, or do you want to give us some thoughts on, like, where you think they might go next? Or, I mean, we kind of started this thing off by saying that to us it kind of signaled, like, it must mean they know who they want. Do you think they know who they want, or what direction do you think they'll go in, however you want to answer that?
I can't imagine it's not Dan Quinn.
Oh.
I really, you know, he's been a successful head coach, you know, albeit he lost the Super Bowl, right, in that comeback.
He's not out there in a helmet and shoulder pads, you know.
Exact, true, very true. But I think he's ready for his next opportunity, and I feel like that may have pushed the envelope in terms of, okay, you know, this is the time, unfortunately, because – Dan might take another job. Everyone's reaching out to him to interview. Is there 8 or 9 vacancies now?
I
think there were 7 before Pete, and then Bill just this morning. Belichick, is stepping down.
Well, how about Bill? You want Bill Belichick as the next head coach of the Seahawks?
That would be a complete 180.
Are you crazy? Pete and Bill join forces.
I don't see that happening.
No. How about Vrabel? We talked about him on the show even, and everyone was shocked when he got let go. He was kind of the first shocking one, and then Pete was the next day. But instantly I thought, well, hire that guy.
Yeah. No, he's a great, great head coach. You know, been to the playoffs and, you know, just a couple pieces from getting over the hump and getting to the big game.
Yeah.
But, I really, I don't see, especially with just changing the culture, because that's I think the biggest thing is keeping that intact.
Yeah.
Somewhat.
Okay. The Seahawks all culture, players, you mean? Like someone who was
yes,
here
exactly.
in Quinn. Yeah,
These guys were all brought in under John and Pete's reign.
Right,
and so they fit a certain, you know, I don't know how to say it, but just they're pieces that were designed for this team.
Right.
And
no, I got you. Yeah. I
don't know how that mixes. And there's going to be overhaul when a new coach comes in regardless. Like yeah. Dan's not going to keep everything the same when he does get here. But I think that messaging and the turnover can happen quicker if you bring in Dan Quinn.
How about if you look into college? There's a certain coach that just beat a college football team from Seattle that I'm pretty nervous, but also, I guess, I mean, he's a good coach, but I can't even really complete the thought, but yeah. There's a guy out there that likes to run the ball,
Kalen,
and they play
Kalen
pretty
DeBoer?
Good defense.
Kalen DeBoer?
No, that's the offensive guy. How about the defensive guy that likes to wear khakis?
Well, so see, a lot of people are. Wait, Harbaugh's an offensive guy.
Well, he's a but his teams also are really known for defense, which I like a lot. I mean, look what he's done with Michigan. He, you know, at the Niners, they had a stout defense. Yeah. I mean, you know, I'm just saying he's a tough-nosed guy. Maybe is also what I'm thinking.
Yeah.
No matter what I think of him, sort of in all my years of rooting against him. Oh man, I hate him.
You know,
I can't stand Harbaugh.
I think it ultimately comes down to, you know, who John can see the best fit. You know, they're like, just like Pete mentioned, they are in it together. They are partners in this thing, and they have to see eye to eye, or at least be open-minded to the other's opinion. I know that's why this works so well between John and Pete. And so John has to find that chemistry with a coach because, you know, I feel like that's kind of the struggle for a lot of organizations where, you know, it's like, I'm running the show, or you just coach, or and
the power struggle, the sort of egos and everything
gets never been anything close to that here. Mm-hmm. It has just been like, okay, well, this is what I think. What do you think? And that's a real partnership.
Yeah.
Right. And so, I've always thought it was tough. You know, it's tough to coach in this league if you get paired up with a guy who just has a totally drastically different view of how a football team should be built and ran.
Well, if I had a vote, if I had a say, if I was sitting at the big Seahawk mahogany table, you know what I would say, producer Katie?
What?
I would say, let's look east. Let's look to the northeast. There's a high school coach that I think just won a state championship and used to play quarterback for us, old number 8. And then if we look right in our own backyard, there's a defensive middle linebacker, used to wear number 51. He handles the D. This guy handles the O. Let's do this thing. You know? Come on. You want to throw your hat in the ring? You want a co-head coach or head coach?
If Hass takes the job, I'll consider it.
Ooh. Someone better call him.
Come on. McNasty. Get after it.
Oh, man.
Oh,
I want Bienemy, too.
What's that?
Oh, Bienemy is a good Bienemy, name.
Yeah.
People forget about Eric Bienemy.
Yeah. Listen.
No, he's
go ahead.
Done
sorry.
Great things with the Commanders, you know, just in the short time there. I got to believe they're taking a look at him as the head coach. And then Canales is, again, a name that, you know, probably hasn't come up much. But Dave was here for, you know, a lot of our great years. And then he went, had a good year here, you know, as a quarterback. Coach a couple years, but then jumped over to Tampa Bay, and they're in the playoffs right now, and with Baker Mayfield, and they have a chance. So I could see him being a name getting a lot of interviews soon.
Well, whoever it is for me, I just, you know, I want to just make sure that they are given the chance to be here for a while, or to set their system the way that Pete was, the way that we had, you know, Holmgren for a while. Like, I know there's one of the guys just right there in the middle, but you need some continuity, you know. I don't want to all of a sudden become one of these teams that's chasing a head coach and chasing a quarterback and chasing after, because that just, you know, be careful what you wish for, Seahawk fans, because Pete Carroll whatever you think, it at least was steady and you could count on him. And so that's what I'm nervous about.
And you look at some teams that are paying three guys not to coach, and
yeah,
and I hope they do the right thing and they give Antonio Pierce the job. But I mean, it should have been Bisacci's job a year ago. You know, who they let go after taking them to the playoffs in probably one of the most tumultuous situations I've ever seen, like just total chaos. But he kept the ship steady,
yeah,
and they made the playoffs after all that. So I mean, it's some of these things are common sense.
Yeah,
it's like, wait, he took us to the playoffs after we started horribly, and we fired a coach, and he jumped in and took us to the playoffs.
Yeah, there's something to be said. Something to be said for some continuity, some steadiness, some, you know, just players can count on someone, like things like that. I mean, that's what I want. Fans can count on it. You know, just want to be, and you want to just stay competitive, obviously. So whoever it is, come on, let's go Seahawks. Oh boy, the news is breaking fast this offseason. We'll be here for all of it. Thanks for checking in on this emergency podcast. Thanks to our sponsors, EpicSeats.com, SimplySeattle.com, PackBack.com for the coolest coolers ever, and of course Delta.com, Delta Airlines. Yeah, well, let's get out of here. Hands in the middle. Lofa, come on, break it down for Pete.
I mean, one of the fiercest competitors I've ever met. And I'm talking up there with the likes of, you know, Kobe, Michael, all those greats. Like, I shit you not. There was nobody that loved winning more and despised losing more than Pete Carroll. So, always compete on three. One, two, three.
Always compete.
Thank you for listening to Believe. You can show support to your host by subscribing to the show and giving us a 5-star rating on your preferred platform. Check us out at Believe.com and search for BLEAV on YouTube.
You know when you're listening to a true crime story that has an unbelievable plot twist that makes you stop in your tracks? That's what our podcast, People Are the Worst, brings you with each episode. I'm Rachel.
And I'm Rebecca. We're identical twins who love true crime cases that make you say, "Didn't see that coming," and we hate the people responsible for them. Listen to People Are the Worst now on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.